welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark.
Hey, Mike.
There's not a listener of this series that hasn't been informed recently about overprescribing of opioids, particularly synthetic opioids, but all kinds of opioids. And we've been warned by hospitals and states, and the press reminds us regularly, and there are stories in the newspapers that seem to be every day about overdoses and deaths, and every once in a while there's a pop star or a music star or a movie star that overdoses. And it's hard to make the argument that we couldn't do better with opioid prescribing. Clearly, the balance is between treating somebody's real pain and going overboard and giving them too much and not using a whole cadre of tools that we've got to treat chronic pain. You've chosen a poem this week that comes from JAMA. It was published this year. It starts on page 1624. It's a poem that answers the question, how should primary care docs handle opioid prescribing for adults with chronic pain not caused by cancer? So I won't list all the things, but there are lots of things, you know, some of them bony things, some of them, you know, very nonspecific, like fibromyalgia, and we're constantly asked by patients either to refill medicines or to increase the dose of medicines, or will you give me something stronger than I can buy at the pharmacy? Mark, what did this JAMA article find?
Yeah, this was I think this is a really complicated issue, like you alluded to. And I think in some ways the CDC guideline probably maybe oversimplifies things a little bit and makes some assumptions about what's possible. And, so I think it's worth seeing what they say, and then we can talk about that a bit. But, you know, yeah, like you said, prescription opioid use has gone way up, higher in this country than I think we might be second. I can't remember quite to who in the world. In opiate use. So they did a systematic review. Roger Chow was the lead author on this, and he's a really good person who does systematic reviews out in University of Oregon. He's works for the task force in the past, so I know he does good work. They did a really careful search, and overall they found that the overall quality of the evidence was poor. They presented this evidence to a panel of experts, and this experts from the CDC made the following recommendations. Basically, recommended non-pharmacologic therapies like exercise and non-opiates like NSAIDs, antidepressants, and anticonvulsants as first line for chronic pain. I think we probably agree with that. Establish realistic goals for improvement in pain and function prior to initiation. So, you know, help reframe it as we are not going to eliminate your pain. We're going to help make your pain more bearable, you know, help you function at a higher level. But the expectation that all pain will be gone is not really realistic for many patients. Discuss the known risks and benefits of opiates prior to initiation. And I think that probably, you know, I'll add, includes saying that it really hasn't been, these haven't been studied for long. There have been very few studies for more than a year, and most of the studies are 3 months or shorter. And we know that tolerance develops and, you know, patients become hypersensitized to painful stimuli if they've been on opiates for a long time. Initiate therapy with immediate release preparations and avoid extended release preparations. Use the lowest dose possible. Follow patients closely, and if the doses exceed 50 to 90 morphine milligram equivalents a day, which is a pretty substantial dose, get a pain specialist involved. Ensure close follow-up after you make dosage changes, and use risk mitigation tools. So, you know, things that can make sure patients are taking their medication, urine drug screens, things like that to, you know, check for diversion. Those have been shown to be effective. So, and again, most of these studies were fairly short-term. Most of the evidence was fairly low quality. So I think there's a heavy dose of opinion and, you know, expert opinion in these recommendations. So I'm curious what you think about this, Mike. I mean, this is, I think to some extent, you know, I'll just add that in the patient population I care for, these people have had some hard miles, and I see people who are, you know, who are not, we actually have a non-narcotic policy at the clinic I work at. And, you know, I see people where I walk in the room and I think they're about 65 and it turns out they're 52. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you see these folks who've had very, very challenging, difficult, physically burdensome lives. And you know, it's difficult to say, okay, this person who's living in an unheated trailer, gosh, you better get on an exercise program, you know, things like that, where they're having trouble, you know, finding food. So that's not the typical population, but often patients that have these chronic pain conditions do spiral downward socioeconomically, and so they have particular challenges.
Right. I mean, just a few thoughts. One is that, you know, perhaps part of this epidemic of over-prescribing is the fault of the pharmaceutical industry, particularly with regard to some of these newer synthetic opioids, things like fentanyl.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There are, as you're suggesting, people who are in real pain, and the problem, at least in my patients, is that, you know, if we don't take it seriously and if we don't engage with them and if we don't send the message that we want to solve the problem and our hesitation isn't that we don't believe them, mm-hmm. they're going to find either another doctor who can do this or find drugs on the street. I don't mean that to sound threatening. It just it is the way of the world. They feel they've got the pain, mm-hmm. and they want it treated. So a lot of this has to do with patient education and some of the things that you're talking about in terms of focusing on functional outcomes, et cetera. The last point, which is related to that, I just want to make is that, you know, we have to be careful because some of the things that are recommended, I mean, for example, the drug screening, there's a good or perhaps a reasonable scientific rationale behind why we might want to do that. But it really has a profound implication on the doctor-patient relationship. It's mm-hmm. sending a message that we don't trust them and we need to corroborate that they're actually taking their medicines, which is, in fact, what we're doing. But it's really hard to build a trusting relationship when you do those sorts of things. So as you said before, this is a really complicated issue. It involves trust. It involves effective communication. It involves coming up with a shared decision that both the patient feels comfortable with and the provider feels comfortable with. And sometimes that just isn't possible.
Yeah. And yet we know that diversion happens. It certainly happens a lot in the rural South where I am. And I've been asked several times by patients quite openly that, you know, they would split the proceeds with me if I just looked like I'm a criminal or something. But, you know, very blatantly asking, you know, hey, we can split the proceeds. I'll go to South Carolina. I won't get you in trouble. That kind of thing. So it is happening. You know, I used to be at a clinic where they have that urine drug screen policy, and it was not at all uncommon to have patients who had 270 Percocets given to them by a physician the previous month and have zero, you know, opiates in their system when they came back. So, it does happen. And so, at the same time, I agree with you that it's really, damaging to the relationship and the trust. And yeah, I don't know. Tough situation. And I agree that the, you know, industry has had a big role in pushing these medications, in, you know, getting them out there and really encouraging people and really minimizing the potential harms and maximizing the benefits. And I think there are some things, it's a different topic, but, you know, mind-body interventions and things like that, you know, can be very helpful for some patients, but again, difficult in patients who are struggling to eat or have a safe place to live to you know, get into a mind-body intervention.
Well, thanks, Mark. We didn't solve the world's problems, but we learned a little bit about it.
Hopefully we'll do a little better next week.
Okay, thanks. Talk to you next week.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.